Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with a Survivor 44 Episode 3 recap. Alexa's still on vacation. We'll be back for our predictions and power rankings this weekend, which we still don't know who we're going to have as our guest for that yet. But Alexa will be back this weekend for that. In the meantime, I'm joined by John, who has been co-hosting with McKenna Survivor Rewind, which has been a new show this season on our channel. If you haven't checked it out yet, check it out. John, I know you've been talking a lot about this season and past seasons. How are you feeling so far? And what do you think about what just went down with our lady Claire?
You know, I've been really struggling to figure out how much I like it. I'm enjoying this season a lot. I think we do have like a pretty interesting cast for the most part, you know, the people that they actually show on the, on the episodes, but there's just been so much time dedicated to advantages that it's kind of, when we got to that group key hunt in this episode today, I was like, okay, I'm done with advantages this season. But luckily, it was a shorter segment than it was last episode, and like, it's growing on me. This cast is fun, and I think there's a lot of potential. It's just interesting that we're sitting here with the fourth person out of this game, and it's four preseason fan favorites.
Yeah, it is. It is funny how it has been fan favorites. And I think that just kind of talks about how it kind of illuminates how much people blow the preseason out of proportion. Right. Because you think like, oh, this is who I'm going to stand. This is who I'm going to follow. This is who I'm going to be excited about, all of that. But I kind of like the old school way when we would go back to you just watch the first episode and you liked whoever you liked. I know that there's been pregame press forever. I'm not trying to say that there hasn't. I just think that It's interesting how the pregame press has really changed people's views, and especially with people on Twitter and things like that. I mean, Zach put out a good tweet today about Claire, and I think Claire went to the school of Zach Twitter, because Zach is phenomenal at Twitter, so everybody thought he was going to do good, and instead Zach was the first person voted out of his season. So I don't necessarily think any of that stuff has anything to do with what's going to actually take place on the island. But yeah, Claire was a huge fan favorite. And what's kind of interesting is I think it skewed people's perspectives on her with how she was actually playing the game. Because when we did our power rankings and stuff this week, I put Claire at number 13 because I wasn't so sure about her. Peridium and Alexa both had her at 10. Now we got the other stuff. I haven't inputted it all yet, so that'll happen. But I think people were a little bit higher on Claire because of her outside of the game personality, because of the persona that she presented in the pregame press. I was saying all along, my reasoning for putting Claire at 13 was because she was the only one we heard talking about Matt and Franny as a negative. Mm-hmm. And this week, we'll talk all about the idols and everything like that, but I don't think the rest of the tribe was as anti-Matt and Franny as she thought they were. And we'll talk about how that perspective might have changed. And Josh actually had a very important confessional tonight, and that's fun and all that. But the one thing that this absolutely proves is you cannot sit out of every single challenge in Survivor. If you lose somebody, it doesn't matter. You have to do it. And I know that the rule of you cannot sit out back-to-back challenges only is for the one specific episode, which is why back in the day, Sandra and Courtney and stuff didn't have a choice but to participate in at least something. And I think that Claire was at a bit of a disadvantage because there weren't reward challenges also put in to make her have to do at least something. But this just shows anybody who goes out in the future, no matter how weak you think you are, no matter how useless you think you are to your tribe, you fight like hell to say, no, I'm playing at least once. Now, she was also in very weird circumstances because of Bruce getting medevaced on day one. But you still have to fight and claw and say, look, I haven't participated yet. I want to do this. And do an easy part. They literally wanted her to just climb up and hit the key off. That's all they wanted her to do.
Yep. Yeah, I think the big thing is, I don't even think this is a question of, like, is Claire strong enough to compete in these challenges? I think it's a question of, does Claire even want to be here?
For the challenges, like, I think she wants to play the game.
Yeah, but, like, part of the Survivor experience is competing in the challenges, right? You shouldn't be so eagerly volunteering yourself not to compete in them, especially not to compete in three in a row. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I almost wonder how much of it was – I was saying with Peridium in this last episode, I think Claire was playing dumb, but she's dumb like a fox. Like, she knew mm-hmm. what she was doing. She knew what her strategy was. And I think the cast might have seen what her strategy was. She was out there to be a strategic player, to be a social player. She wasn't worried about the physical aspect of it. And I think she just put a little too much faith in the physical aspect, not playing a factor in everything. I do think that had she at least participated in one, it might have been different. But I don't think Claire sitting out or participating was going to make much of a difference, because Danny unknowingly probably saved Matt's life by allowing him to find the fake idol. Now, this was not intentional, obviously, but Danny planting that fake idol, Matt finds it. Danny calls him on it in front of Josh, so Matt can't do anything about it. Matt now tells everybody on the tribe. I'm sure Heidi knows at this point too that he has the idol. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows. And because of that, Josh gets the confessional of, well, now Matt and Franny, they're not as big of a threat. Like, I don't want to get rid of Matt now because he has an idol and he'll play it for Franny. So I'm not going to do that. They all knew Matt didn't have a vote. So they all knew that his only protection was that idol. So they weren't going to tell him that the votes were coming to him. And that's when everything turned to Claire. We got the little snippets about why it would be Josh, but it just felt like it was a weak counter argument. Now, I will say this. If I'm Matt and Franny, I know that they ultimately voted with the tribe because they could see where things had fell. They knew that Heidi was going to vote that way. Matt and Franny are screwed now if they don't swap mm-hmm. next week. Because if Soka goes back to tribal council, Matt and Franny are two without a vote. Now, everybody knew that Matt lost his vote once, but they don't know that he lost his vote for this next one as well. And so because he lost his vote for this next one as well, if he tells Franny that, Franny needs to keep that hush-hush from Heidi, because Heidi's not going to force a tie, and Danny and Josh aren't breaking up based on what we saw tonight.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult predicament to be in, because, and again, that's kind of goes to the complaints you've been levying towards this Advantage Island in the first place, is they didn't get a choice to lose the one vote, and now here's Matt without a second vote, and if he goes to tribal council again, it's just the exact same situation we saw last week with Tika, with Sarah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. The question becomes, like, is Matt the person in trouble, or is Franny the person in trouble at that point? And it seems, based on the conversations we saw today, that, like, Danny seems pretty stoked on how strong Franny is as a competitor.
Yeah. Danny is definitely an old school survivor. He's got Tony things with him, and then he's got that alpha male, like, first 20 seasons of Survivor. He's got elements of that too. And I like it. I mean, it's different, because while Jonathan was a huge alpha male, Jonathan was a different personality than Danny. Danny's just an interesting casting choice. I said on the recap last week, I'm surprised that he even made the cut to get on the show, but I'm very happy he did, because he's a really good personality. He's just a different kind of personality than what they generally go for, at least in these recent seasons of Survivor. Danny's all about tribe strength, though. And I love the part where Franny's talking about, well, it doesn't matter about this, that, and whatever with strength. And Danny's making the faces while she's saying that. And you could see that as smug or whatever. I think it's funny. And I think it's kind of refreshing in a way, because for season after season since COVID season, we have heard a lot about, well, there's different meaning to strength. There's a different meaning to this. I kind of like that we're getting a player who is very likable and definitely has a good social game, also kind of saying, no, strength is what's most important. I think that's a fun element to put back into the game, because we haven't seen a character who has felt that way so strongly in recent seasons, who also has the pull to actually make something happen with that. And I think that's part of the reason why Claire went home too. As soon as Heidi said, Danny's my number one, Claire was toast. Yeah. There was nothing that Claire could do to stay in the game, because I think most of her relationship building was based around, oh man, what's going on with Matt and Franny? What's going on with Matt and Franny? At least that's what we're getting from the edit. I don't actually know. But she even said, I don't have a relationship with Josh. Heidi said she doesn't have a relationship with Josh. Maybe that's more on Josh than Claire or Heidi. But if Claire's whole game is going to be the social game, she should be number ones with everybody, kind of like Nick Wilson was, or the way Michelle was with all the people from Kyle and Scott to Julia and I can't even think of the other person because I don't think there is one, but you know what I mean? You have to have that a little bit stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, I don't think we haven't really seen much of the Ahsoka tribe these last two episodes at all, really, other than like the Madden Franny of it all. I don't think we know anything about the dynamics of this tribe still. I mean, the fact that we barely saw Josh this episode really didn't help that. Mm-hmm. But I think Josh and Danny are a lot closer than we're being led to believe right now. I think clearly Heidi thinks her and Danny are very close, and it seemed that way in the edit, which kind of leaves Franny and Matt on the outside here. But where does that put Claire then? Claire, who is just like, if she's a one with two pairs and another mm-hmm. one, and she's not hooking up with
you
that
mean
one.
Heidi?
No, I'm talking about Claire. I'm talking about Claire going into this vote where...
Gotcha.
You have Danny and Heidi over here, who at least Heidi thinks is the number one. And you have Franny and Matt, who are clearly each other's number ones. Why is Claire not pairing up with Josh at that point? Like, that's the thing that makes no sense about the way she approached it. And unfortunately, like, there was some great editing in this episode, but this season has not done well at editing the relationships on this tribe.
Yeah, but I do see, I think that we started to get into the meat of it this week. I just think, again, the preseason content is throwing people off. I really do. And I think the world outside of the 43 minutes on the show are throwing people off because I felt like we got plenty from Josh tonight. I feel like Josh told me where he stands. Josh told me I am with Danny. And now I can't get rid of Matt because he has an idol and that worries me. But I don't think he was that close with Matt. I think he was ready to cut Matt. And I think it shows that Matt might be really close with Franny, but Matt's not doing a good job of creating relationships with the rest of the tribe. However, I think after this week, we know Danny, Heidi, and Josh are the trio. This is the group. I also think that had Matt not gotten the fake idol, they might have tried to actually push Matt out of the game and keep Claire in. But the one thing that you cannot deny coming out of this is you have five strong. If you were to go to a merge and never go to tribal and never have a tribe swap or anything like that, you have five strong. These five people all get along. If you vote out Matt or Franny this week, great. You have Claire on your side, but you have ostracized the leftover from Matt and Franny because you know that Matt and Franny were closest with each other. So right now, you can be worried all you want that Matt and Franny are a pair, but you have three. You have three. And I think Danny, Josh, and Heidi, Josh doesn't feel like he's that close with Heidi. Heidi doesn't feel like she's that close with Josh, but they both feel really close with Danny. And if Danny's going to be the glue, Danny's just the one who has to bring the three of them together. Your best friends don't have to like each other that much, but they're going to come to your birthday party if you throw a birthday party. You know what I mean? Like, cause they like you. And I think that's what's happening with Danny here. Matt and Matt more so than Franny, I don't feel like is getting everybody to come to his birthday party. I think he's he's got Franny coming, but who else is going to show up? Danny, I feel like Danny is everybody's going to come. And I think they felt that way with Heidi, but I think Heidi gets just freaking pigeonholed into that because of who she is. She's an older, air quotes, woman, and therefore she must be motherly and she must be somebody we can put our faith in and trust in and all that. And it's kind of bullshit that she gets stuck in that grouping, but that's also where it worked to her benefit because everybody felt so close with her, even though she's really only close with Danny based on what we're seeing. Or hearing.
Yeah, it's really interesting seeing like Claire go to Heidi and talk to her, like pitching to her. And it seems like Heidi even in her confessionals said she had a somewhat of a relationship with Claire, but clearly not as strong as the one with Danny. Mm-hmm. I think Heidi's like the low-key one of the most interesting characters or like castaways this season. I'm so excited to see what lies in store for her, because I think she has that conscience, which like got here, but she like put her foot down and was like, no, like this is what Danny wants. I'm sticking with my guns and my the person I trust to work here. It's going to be really interesting seeing where she goes, because I don't think it was a 0% chance she didn't vote Josh out of this vote.
I agree with you, but I also think that you go with who you believe is going to be your closest ally at the end of the game. And she knows that if she votes Josh out of the game, she puts Danny over here and there's no way to really mend that relationship because now you've broken trust so early in the game. And who is she siding with then? Matt and Franny, who would never break up for her, and Claire, who seems closer with Matt and Franny, because who's been narrating the Matt and Franny story the entire time? It's been Claire. Yeah. So I think Heidi made the right move for her game. I think if she goes the other way, she's number four. In this situation, she's number two or three, potentially number one. I mean, you know, it's so far out, but she's in this group. If she had gone and voted out Josh, she's not in that group. And I think she was smart enough to realize that right from the start.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The strike's so interesting because it has such a clear divide in the age, really. Right? Like, we have that younger three that was talking, and it didn't surprise me that Claire and Franny were talking and coming up with this plan to get rid of Josh. But Survivor, when you're throwing us these, like, decoys to, like, make us believe something in Tribal Council, and you have someone with Josh's story, you need to tell us Josh's story for us to believe that there's even a possibility of him going home.
Yes. Now, I will say this, though. I totally, totally agree with that. Totally agree. Like, but again, I can't help it. And this might be the topics of the after show. What was happening, what happened outside of the game is what makes this more important. Julia Landauer, and I don't remember if at the time she was like a professional NASCAR driver, but she was like a female NASCAR driver, which was a big deal. That was a huge deal. We didn't know that, like what her role really was. And we didn't hear that story when she was on Karamoan. We knew she did something with professional racing, but like, I don't think we knew it to the extent. Whereas right now we know so much about these people before they even step foot on the island that it does skew our way of thinking. Cause we're all sitting there going, until we hear about Josh having his stomach removed because of some rare disorder he had as a child, there's no way we're not going to see that. But based on what we've seen on TV so far, Josh should have been a reasonable person to go home tonight. It just wasn't shown that way. But I have to say this, because I don't know if this has happened in a very, very long time. Kudos to the editors and to production and to CBS and to Jeff. And I'm going to get them all out of the way now so I can go talk shit about them immediately after this. But good for all of you for giving all 15 characters a confessional in tonight's episode. That is awesome. And that is something I was complaining about last week, because last week, while they did a pretty good job, they got 12 of the 16 or 13 of the 16, which is much better than they generally do. You're still immediately telling us, okay, these three people aren't as important to the storyline. Tonight, those three people were huge to the storyline. We'll talk about Jamie in a little bit. Josh was integral, and he was almost the boot. And Heidi was the deciding voter. At least that's the way it was made to seem. So the fact that they gave all 15 of them a confessional when only one tribe went to tribal, and it was a pretty straightforward vote. I had tonight the most confessionals went to Danny, and he had 5. That's how well edited this episode was. So that's really good. And that's something that I hope they continue to do and continue to push. And I'm all about that. We don't need the 17 confessional episodes like we saw from Troy Zan and the This Is My Island episode and all that. We don't need that. We love that sometimes, but we don't need that, because when it happens too often, you say to yourself, well, why can't we hear that from Kane or Brandon or Jam Jam or Lauren? Like, why aren't we getting a little bit? Jam Jam probably was the quietest in tonight's episode. That's pretty unreal. Mm-hmm. Although we did hear about him snoring, which again, we'll talk about soon. But I just want to mention that, because two characters who were irrelevant last week. Josh, who we knew nothing about in the first 3 hours of this show, they became relevant tonight. And yes, I'm very happy about that. And maybe it's just going to take Soka going to Tribal Council every time for us to get content from them consistently. But with Claire now gone, I think that has to open up confessionals for Josh and Heidi. Danny, Franny, and Matt, they are stars as long as they last. They are going to get their they're going to get their confessionals. They're going to talk because they're kind of the characters and the power players. Now, where do Josh and Heidi fit? And I feel like this episode was kind of like, they're welcome to Survivor. You are on season 44. And that's exciting. That's fun. And I'm happy for everybody that you all were on the screen tonight. You all got to say something tonight. And I hope that's something – I hope that that's a concerted effort that the editors are making and one that they continue to make moving forward.
Yeah, it's great. It's great because it felt like we actually got character moments from the people not going to Tribal Council this week. And it's just like, it's something that's felt like it's been kind of lacking because the game has been so fast paced lately. And there has been such an emphasis on the tribe going to Tribal Council. I mean, the from the end of the immunity challenge to Tribal Council was what, like 10 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, it wasn't
very long. We didn't get a lot of that strategy. I mean, granted, there wasn't a lot to talk about in that segment. I understand why. But we got so much character stuff prior to the challenge, which it feels like it hasn't happened in forever.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, and again, this is where like we always talk about every cast is great, right? And I even mean post-merge Ghost Island, okay? Like these are like every cast is great. It comes down to how are they portrayed by the editors, by production, like what do they want to do? And I agree. I mean, let's talk about Purple real quick cuz nothing happened. Right? Nothing happened with Purple. There was nothing of consequence going on Purple. But we still got some good character moments. We got Carson narrating that Helen went home, which I think is really good for his winner chances in the long run. He was narrating the entire thing about how she went, how he was so giddy about it, all that fun stuff. We saw Sarah talking about it sucks to be on the outs. Everybody's trying to make her feel better. She knows she's doomed. She's trying to pretend she's not that far out. Carson and her are talking about how are we gonna go about this? But everything else that we got from that tribe was Carolyn complaining about Jam Jam snoring, but she would never vote out Jam Jam for snoring. And Sarah talking about how it's so much fun to sit there and laugh and just really enjoy themselves. That's what we got from Tika. We don't normally get that kind of stuff unless there's conversation about idols going on. So I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of these types of moments. So I bring that up with Tika, and I haven't talked about Ratu yet because Ratu we'll get to. But what did you think about what we saw from Tika tonight, considering how big the personalities are and how, you know, they were the tribe last week?
For a tribe not going to Tribal Council that we spent a lot of time with last episode, like, it's this perfect balance with them. I do not feel as high on Carson's confessional as saying it increases his winner rate because it kind of made him seem really overzealous to be making big moves. To me, it seems like someone who might fall flat on his face at some point. And I feel like it more paints Sarah with like a more of an underdog story. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if all four of these people make the merge at this point, in all honesty, based on just like this moment that we got with them. And even like Jam Jam snoring and then talking about the fact that, you know, his husband tells him his stories, but no one ever complains about it. It's funny. And it lets us relate to these people.
Yeah.
And Carolyn, who's arguably the largest character on that tribe, was the least seen, but you still remember Carolyn in the episode.
Yeah, totally. I absolutely, what'd she say? She's playing Survivor and she's playing it well with two different shoes on, right? That was her confessional with two different shoes on. No, Carolyn's a bundle of fun, and that whole tribe is a bundle of fun. And I think, I think what's going to happen with Sarah, and I always go back old school because I like those seasons more for the most part. She's Gina Cruz, where it's like, she's going to get so close. She's going to get so close and she's just going to go right before the merge. I don't see how that tribe, unless the swap happens next week, which I don't know if we're going to get one next week. I know Jeff said something. We get Matt's face. He's
the grimacing. Preview kind of hinted at it with like reaching into a bag, but maybe who knows what that means.
Who knows what that means? Because we haven't seen it in so long that I don't really know. I can't say confidently, but If we get a swap, I like Cyrus' chances a lot more. I don't like Cyrus' chances and Tika's chances of not going to Tribal Council again before the merge. And honestly, if next week's not the swap, they might be going next week. Like they said they needed the perfect puzzle for them to be able to survive, or the perfect challenge set up for them. And we'll talk about the challenges, but I just, you know, I don't see them. I don't see lightning striking twice. This almost felt like when Jatia survived, just for Jatia to go the next episode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I felt good about the confessionals they were giving for Tika. That's all. Like, it felt like these were longevity confessionals rather than these people are going right away.
Yeah, I agree with everybody except for probably what do you call it? Sarah. I think Sarah's in trouble.
Yeah. I think until otherwise, until there's a swap or like we get to merge, Sarah remains in your bottom for power rankings until we can clearly see her changing.
Yes, I totally agree with that. All right, so let's jump over to Ratu, where John, the floor is yours, because I know how huge this was for you to sit down and watch this episode and hear, in one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard, the big man Kane sing "O Canada" to everybody on the tribe. And everybody, I mean, he had an enraptured audience. Some would say it was almost like he was holding them hostage. John, what did you think of this?
Well, as Kane's fellow countrymen, you know, it's nice seeing some representation, but he butchered the national anthem. He sang the wrong words. I don't know where he got some of these words from, but you know what? Again, like going on these like character moments, this was a great character moment for Kane, who
it was.
We feel is on the outs in this tribe, who feels like he's on the outside, but we still check in with him. We get this like Canadian aspect of him, and we know what the record of Canadians on Survivor is at this point. Mm-hmm. As long as he doesn't Tom Laidlaw himself, he's fine.
Yeah, the only one that I was really high on preseason shows what I know.
But like, we also get this like super dorky side of Kane, which really came out in his preseason press, of him like being this like nerd into all these medieval and fantasy elements, and you know, loving Dungeons and Dragons, and the story of like these five knights uniting to defeat their enemies and things. Like, it was a cool segment, and I don't know, Kane kind of felt a little derpy to me at first, but this is a really good segment to kind of focus on you for your longevity in the game.
I was a big fan of Kane in this episode, especially what I thought was the most interesting about the way that this worked out for Kane was that he really seemed like he was screwed. I mean, when me and Peridium talked on the predictions and power rankings, we were like, if they go, Kane's gone. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This guy's done. And he was actually talking about how much he loves this tribe, how much he's getting along with this tribe, how he feels like he's bonding with this tribe. And I thought that was really surprising. Like, I was not expecting that to be what we were going to get from Kane. And then we had Brandon talking about never underestimate. And, you know, my family told me never quit. And it was a very positive backstory. Mm-hmm. And we so rarely see those. And the clips and everything, it was so positive. I wanted to applaud. It was great. And I think that maybe it's not so easy over on this tribe the next time they go to Tribal Council, because it seemed like Kane was done. Instead, right now, it seems like Kane's having the time of his life. And I will say this, in terms of like nerdy guys, this type of nerdy guy, the Davey, which I associate very much with Kane and Matt, that's the type of nerdy guy I want on this season. And yes, you need to have a Christian every now and then and a Cochran every now and then. But I find this to be so much more of an interesting type of nerd, because it's automatically endearing, right? Like Carson kind of goes more the Christian route, which is he's endearing because he's endeared himself to us. As soon as these three open their mouths, or these two on this season, but once they open their mouths, you're like, God, I just want this guy to do good. Like, I don't want him to fail. Like, come on. And I think somebody who's working along that lines is also on the Ratu tribe, and that's Jamie. I was really into Jamie. Wow. I felt so bad for her when Matthew was like, gotcha, because God, she is so much fun. And she was somebody who didn't have a confessional last week, but she's here, man. She's playing the game. She loves being there. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. And she just seems like she's so easy to get along with. Like, she's standing there with a worm and she's just like, I'm going to eat this worm. Like, yeah. I don't care. It's here. I might as well eat it. And she's just having fun doing it. Like, seeing her like making house plants for the camp and things like that. It's this is some adorable behavior. And yeah, when you get to the point where it turns out that Matthew hid this fake idol and she found that and not a real idol, you feel bad because you want Jamie to do well because you just fell in love with her over the previous 5 minutes of the episode.
Yeah. No, it's brutal. I mean, it really is. It's really brutal. And you want these people to succeed. And Jamie, maybe Matt is just so screwed. And I felt so bad when he's got that confessional about, I got the idol and this, and he's so excited. And I felt so bad for him because it's like, oh no. And why would you think differently? And that's what I want to talk about right now. Now that I brought Jamie into the fray, and yeah, she was eating worms with Lauren, and Lauren did agree and eat the worm. And I liked Kane fake dying after eating it. But the big thing, and we haven't talked about it for 31 minutes, the big thing in this episode was the use of the idol notes and the fake idols. Kane found an idol, so it's a regular hidden immunity idol. It's not one that's in the birdcage.
Matthew, not Kane.
Matthew, I'm sorry. Matthew found a hidden immunity idol. I got Canada on the brain. He then went around and made a fake one, hid the fake one in the well, brilliantly used, oh, you're looking for worms. Have you checked back there to get Jamie to fall prey? He wanted Jamie to find it, which was awesome because he knows that he can now manipulate Jamie. It's going to build trust. It's going to do this. It's a great move. It's awesome. I love it. Mm-hmm. On the other tribe, on Soka, we have Danny eat the fake clue and then take the fake coin, hide it in a pack or hide it back in the cage, put the key under the tree, and then have Matt go in and find it. He didn't know it was going to be Matt, but that ends up happening. What do you think of the fact that production, that Matt now has a production made fake idol with the note that says this is a real idol? And do you think that now we're hitting a point where people are never going to actually trust that they have idols?
That's a great question, because this is clearly what production had in mind with this entire thing. And I think previously in like former seasons of Survivor, I don't think people have leveraged the idol note enough. I think it is something that you have that you can easily use to your advantage. I guarantee you, McKenna and I are going to be talking about fake idols a lot tomorrow.
But tune in and become patrons.
Okay, yeah, exactly. It's a tough call because even with each tribe having a different tribe's idol as their fake, like, this gets really confusing really fast. Like, and it's less confusing for us as a viewers because editors can tell us where everything is and who has what and everything. I can only imagine this is the most confusing thing ever on the island.
Sorry. Yeah, I agree. And I'm okay with it. I did see on the interwebs that some people weren't okay with it. I think it was Fishbach. I mean, I might have just stolen what Fishbach said based on what Zach said here. He said, give credit to Fishbach, Phil. I very briefly scrolled Twitter, and I don't even remember who said it, but I do also know that there was somebody who said that they're not okay with production doing this and making the fake idol. I'm kind of fine with it. The one thing that I do think, though, is that it takes away, it adds another variable, right? It takes away another constant. Because Matthews, we have no problem with. We're stoked whenever we see a fake idol made, especially when it's a good one. Like, good for you. You did it. You get it over with. Like, go make your thing. Plant it. David Wright did it to Jay. It was freaking awesome. It's one of the funniest moments when Jay has that realization. We love it. It's awesome stuff. But The production one, I can see why that would frustrate people, because production is making a fake idol that is now being rehidden by somebody who found something and blah, blah, blah. Danny also did this about as perfectly as you could do it. And I think credit needs to be given where credit is due. Matthew is clearly a student of the game, and Matthew is all about, you know, making things in his backyard. I'm sure he can start fire with Flint in under 5 seconds. Like, he's all about things that we've seen before. Danny did this out of nowhere. And I think what made it so good with Danny was that Danny had to not only come up with the plan to do everything, which I think most people would come up with that plan, but then to hide the key and say, okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to look all the time to see who found the key. And I'm always going to be out looking with people, so I'll know who would have found the key. Like, that's essentially his thing. And we saw last week, Danny talking about, everybody talking about, Danny's always gone. He's always off doing his own thing.
Yeah.
So Danny knows who's going to find it. And as soon as they lie to the tribe, I'm now going to put them on the spot. Some people might think that this wasn't the right move. I think it's a brilliant move, because now the whole tribe knows that Matt has the idol, and nobody thinks that Danny possibly could have found the real one, because they don't know that there was a real and a fake in there. So Danny played this perfectly. And look, if they're going to have this birdcage advantage, you can't just have it, oh, you reach in, you grab the real one, and that's it. Because then that person's in a bad spot already. Danny perfectly covered his tracks, covered his bases, and was able to put Matt right on the spot. I agree in some regards that production, making idols that are fake and all that, that is probably not the best trend to be setting. But I also believe that this was going to happen, and I'd rather see what took place on Soka tonight happen than people just randomly than people just be screwed. Like, I still think there was a lot of gameplay that went into everything that took place tonight. Matt could have just said, Danny, oh my God, I found it. But instead, Matt tried to keep it hidden. So it puts a little bit of a target on his back. Like, there's so many different layers to this. And the biggest one is this, and I think this is why I don't have a problem with it right now. In recent seasons, everybody has been telling everybody when they have idols. Yep. Danny didn't tell anybody, and that's why Danny was able to get away with this. If he had told one person, this plan doesn't work. And I think that's why I'm okay with the fact that production made this fake idol and all that, and the way it went down, because Danny played it so much differently than pretty much everybody in recent seasons have played it. Maybe that's just good on him, because he doesn't, maybe he doesn't have a close number one, and that's not a good thing. But right now I'm totally fine with the way this played out. And I'm kind of surprised, because I like to bitch about everything.
I think ultimately another thing, like, in the positives for this ultimately weakens the power of immunity idols. And it won't be evident immediately, but in future seasons of Survivor, now everyone is going to be wondering, is this a real immunity idol that you were showing me for trust, or do you have a fake idol? Is this actually something we can leverage here? And that's brilliant, because I think we have lived in an era of Survivor for too long where hidden immunity idols were too strong.
Yeah.
And now we are finally getting to a point where we complain about advantages all the time. We're at a point where it seems like Survivor is really experimenting with their advantages to a point where this could be huge. Like, having these fake idols out there, it will so much distrust amongst this cast as soon as they find out one of them's fake.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And you know what? Like, this keeps the paranoia up nonstop, right? Like, this keeps the paranoia is at a 10 at all times now. You can't get away from the paranoia that this is going to bring, because now anybody who goes out there and plays the game is going to say, oh, I don't know if this is real and I don't know if this is fake. What I think was so interesting about this is the parallel, though, right? Of this is what happens when production makes it, and this is what happens when a tribe member makes it. And we're all okay with what happened with Matthew. And we're all okay that he made the fake one and that he did that and that he duped Jamie and all that. So we can't be mad, I don't think, that Danny used this advantage to his advantage. Like, I don't think we can be mad about that, because I almost view this as, this is part of the advantage. This is part of the birdcage. That is what makes this different than just, you have been handed a fake hidden immunity idol. Go do something with it. But I agree with you. Now the idols aren't as powerful because people don't know if they're real or not. And I'm okay with people not knowing if their idols are real or not. You should have been thinking about that anyway, pretty much since season 33. Like, you should have been thinking about that since David Wright pulled the inside the coconut on Jay. You should be thinking that your idol isn't real anyway. So this just really elevates that paranoia. Now what makes it even more interesting is Matt has one that's the silver coin. Whichever tribe has the silver coin, if they get to the merge, Matt can show somebody on the other tribe that he has the idol, and the other person can show him the exact same thing, and it's real, unlike Matt's, which is fake. And that makes it even more compelling. I like this. I think this is a fun kind of like just Russian roulette type situation of like, who has the bullet? Like, who's going to catch the bullet? You don't know. But was this more entertaining to watch than to just listen to people talk about idols over and over again and then look for it and be looking? This was so much better. We were in on it this time. Now I know why production loves the idol hunt so much, because it is fun to be in on knowing what's going on. It's not fun when you're just watching the same thing season after season after season. Oh, I got to go find an idol. Okay, it's time to go. Here I go. Like, it gets so tiresome. New elements in both of these, and in the storytelling aspect too of Jamie's and Matthew's, that was really well told.
Yeah, that was some of the best editing we've ever seen in Survivor. To have it all set out perfectly, like, we have the story of Jamie, like, digging for earthworms and wanting to eat earthworms and stuff, using that as protein, makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Then we have the hunt, and then we have her reach down into the well, and where Matthew hid this idol is a perfect place to hide this idol. It's an easy place to direct someone to, like he did with Jamie, but also just inconspicuous enough that it makes sense that idol might be there.
Yes, exactly. But, like, it, and the way Survivor's been hiding idols recently and stuff, you wouldn't be surprised to find it in between the rocks at that. And how often are you looking at your feet, right? It's the Shawshank Redemption thing. How often do you look at your shoes?
Yeah. And the other thing, Matthew could not do this if the Ratu idol wasn't the bracelet.
Well, here's the difference, though, right? Well, okay. Was the
Ratu Brandon's idol was the bracelet. Brandon's was the bracelet. So they've already seen an idol on that tribe. Matthew got that same idol back and was able to replicate it. If he had the medallion or the coin, he could not do that.
But he could, because he still had – he didn't make this idol out of the beads from a real idol. He made this out of just stuff from around camp. So he could have made the exact same looking idol. He just wouldn't have known how much it actually looked like a real idol. I think what makes it – I think what that's what makes it more convincing is that it looks just like the one Brandon had.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that, like – because that tribe saw that that's what the hidden immunity idols already looked like, now they assume, like, it just lets it play off a lot more that way, right?
That's totally true. Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, and again, good on Matthew for making something that looks like, and using his knowledge of the game to do it. I mean, again, and I saw this a couple times, like, on Twitter and social media and things. It's the old adage of don't hate the player, hate the game. And that is what we have to do with Survivor at this point. And I love what Matthew and Danny did with the game tonight. I love it. And you know what? It sucks for Claire that this went down, but you can fault Claire all you want, but really it's the game now. Because in the old days, Claire would have never gotten away with that, because she would have had to have gotten thrown in to do something. She would have been chopping a damn rope like Courtney. I mean, it would have just happened. You wouldn't have had a choice. And I think that's the difference right now. It's a different game. And this, these newer casts are learning how to handle these twists and turns. And so we can sit here and we can be aggravated that production made a fake idol and gave it to somebody. Or we can just say, you know what? Danny is taking what production is giving him and figuring out how to play it the best way. And how will that evolve the next time somebody tries to play it? I think that's the way we kind of have to view it, because the twists and turns are going to keep coming. But I sat there thoroughly entertained tonight. And that's not always the case with some of these new twists and turns. I was thoroughly entertained. There wasn't a moment of this episode where I rolled my eyes and said, I don't like this. I really enjoyed all of it. And you know what? I'm okay if we see this next season too, because we have to see a normal growth, right? Like, we have to see something happen. This isn't production taking over the game and ruining the game. This is just production implementing things they've already done in a different way that is infinitely more interesting than we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at production has been loves fake idols. Production loves fake idols. Yeah, if do. I mean, Game Changers, one of the advantages Debbie could have chosen was a fake idol kit, right? Yeah. Like when she won that reward. And so we know production loves this. We know they love putting it out here. I have one massive question that came out of these, though, today. And, of course, we already knew about them. But if a fake idol, because you mentioned that the fake idols are part of the birdcage advantage. If a fake idol is played at a tribal council and Sarah uses her advantage, does she get the fake idols?
That is a very good question. Because at that point, well, I don't think so. And here's why.
Because Jeff will throw it in the fire.
And Sarah will know that it's not a real idol.
Right.
And but, then like, and then, Sarah, but then it also gives no power, because she can show everybody, oh, here, look, I have this idol, and everybody's gonna say that's the fake one.
That's true.
So I don't think she would get that. I think she would literally only get, because I think it would have to be Jeff saying this is a real hidden immunity idol, no vote counts for this person, and then they think it's out of the game and she just immediately is handed it. So everybody's running around like Jamie and Matthew looking for idols. There's not actually an idol to be found because it's sitting in Sarah's bag.
Right.
And unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to see what that play out.
Yeah, that's fair. This is just like this. We're in the new era. We've been in the new era for a while. Survivor's tried some things out. This feels like the best thing we've tried out so far. This feels like like you said, you have this huge adage you say all the time that Survivor needs to trust their players. Mm-hmm. This twist is production trusting its players to know what to do with it.
Yes.
It might be heavy-handed. It might be very direct. It's like, there's clearly a way you should use this, but you can mess it up so easily. And we saw two people take these type of advantages and run with them today.
And we see people mess up simple stuff all the time on this show. And that's what makes the show so damn good. But you know, make your players figure it out. And if they figure it out, they figure it out. And if they don't, they don't. Like, it just is what it is. So I think this is good. I think this is good. They didn't tell Danny, go hide this in a tree and make sure that the right no, this is, I think, less prescriptive than a lot of the other advantages. They pick this person, and if this person does this, then they can't have a vote, and you can do, like, we've seen stuff like that even back during Winners at War. We saw, oh, well, they'll have to give you tokens for it, and we still don't know what tokens are for. I mean, fire tokens are essentially the Red Room at the end of season 2 of Twin Peaks, when you thought that was going to be the end of the show and we weren't going to get a movie and we weren't going to get another show, where it's like, well, what does it really mean? I kind of get it, but what does it really mean? That is essentially what fire tokens are. We're still waiting to find out. And maybe one day we'll have it explained to us when Yule finally deciphers it, because he's been hiding in a cave figuring it out. But I like this. I'm into this. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to quickly turn into Phil real quick, and I'm going to do it quick. It's going to be fast because we've already almost hit an hour. So we're pretty much done here. But very quickly, the puzzle shit is annoying. Like, it's just so aggravating. I'm fine with the rest of the challenge. This is annoying. Somebody from Orange should have ran up and just kicked it over or something. Mm-hmm. And I hate that Jeff is leaning into this of like, oh, did anybody test this one at home? Probably, but like, we literally saw an Owens video that he made with him and Sammy, where he's like, oh, I tried to build this and it wasn't fast enough. Or so I didn't actually listen with sound on. I just saw it and it was literally this replica. So yeah, people are trying it. Make it different, make it something. And then everybody's just running over to look at it. I mean, that's an impossible puzzle pretty much to cheat off of. So I don't understand why they were trying to. That's so hard because you can look at the colors, but every block has the same colors on it. Now you have to figure out which one. So that's hard. But I'm tired of the same elements. Like I'm not tired of the same elements. I'm tired of the same challenge. Keep the same elements. At its heart, these challenges can have the same elements, but you have to change up what the actual physical challenge is.
Yeah. So this puzzle itself is often considered one of the hardest puzzles in Survivor, unless you know how to solve it. And you solve it by putting the piece with three on the bottom, like three of the same color. You put it on the bottom, easy to solve because that's the hardest piece to navigate later on. Get it out of the way right away. Super easy to solve after that.
And I didn't know that. But guess what? Matthew did because his tribe finished first again.
Yes. But it's really interesting seeing this. I was texting McKenna during the episode asking, have we had an instance of this happening where someone has completed a puzzle and the tribes have looked at it to figure out what's going on? And I have to rack my brain a little more because most of the time a puzzle ends a challenge.
Yeah.
And it, you're too, right? But there just happened to be another tribe that had to complete it too. And like we've seen this exact puzzle at the end of challenges before, but I'm trying real hard to figure out of a moment where this has happened. This is something that happens on the challenge all the time. And the solution on the challenge, as soon as you solve a puzzle, you destroy your puzzle. So no one can cheat off of it. And I was honestly shocked Rossu didn't do that.
Yeah, and we've seen that in Survivor before where they try to cover it up or push it over. Maybe Ratu's just trying to play nice in this new era. Everybody's too nice. But you know what? I think my favorite thing about this is Survivor is becoming a little bit not nice again, right? I think of the Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah.
You used to be nice, and now you know what you are. You're not nice. And I really feel like that's what's starting to happen with Survivor. 41 was nice. And then towards the end of the season, it got not nice, but in a way that wasn't much about Survivor. It was more about like the reality of the world we live in. And I didn't enjoy that. It was uncomfortable. It was a different kind. It wasn't, for me, that wasn't like an entertainment thing. It felt rough for the players who were involved in it. It feels like we are starting to gear more towards Marquesas not nice, where okay, in Africa we're all gung-ho and we're gonna do this, and like, you know, we're still gonna like vote people out when we need to, and Lex is gonna say things like, I'm gonna slit your throat, and we're all gonna say, ha, we love Lex, go slit his throat. But I feel like this season is starting to become a little bit like Marquesas, where everything is fun and games, but everybody's a little bit more conniving than they're letting on. And I think people's guards are down because, especially in season 41, when it came to gameplay, people were very nice. And even in 42, people were pretty nice, with the exception of Omer. Like, Omer was pretty ruthless. And then when Marianne voted out Omer, that was pretty ruthless. But up until that point, things weren't super ruthless. And even when they had to vote out Zach, oh, we feel so bad, blah, blah, blah. I feel like we're starting to get to the point where this is not nice again. And right now, people want to be like, oh, you know what? We won't knock this over because we want to make sure that we're in good graces with the other tribe. Give it a season or two. They're going to be punting that thing like Michelle Fitzgerald. They're not going to give a damn. And I think that's what we're working towards. And I'm all about that. And I look forward to that day when that officially happens.
Yeah. Honestly, it might just be the like time away from the break in Survivor. It might just be the, hey, we're so happy we're on Survivor of it all. And like, we're getting to a point now where things are going to start getting ruthless. I think like we're probably in for like a new like renaissance of Survivor coming quick, where we get to that cutthroat nature that we saw from like the Amazon and Pearl Islands moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we're working towards people not being so worried again on the show and being willing to take chances and say ridiculous things like Johnny Fairplay did. Not to that level maybe, but I think we're working our way towards that again. I think people are really starting to have more fun with it, and they're starting to realize this is a game. I don't need to take it so damn seriously. And that's when Survivor's at its best. When people want to win, but they want to have a good time while they're going to win. That's when it's at its best. Yep. And Danny's running around like Tony, just a little bit less buff and a lot more understandable.
And like literally running around like Tony, because he was doing like somersaults and stuff just to put this.
He was army crawling, rolling. It was great. He was running. He said he was running like Peter Pan through the woods. Name one freaking time Peter Pan ever ran through the woods. The guy flies and he like goes through caves and stuff. Peter Pan never ran through the woods. That's not what Peter Pan does. The Lost Boys ran through the woods, but Peter Pan never ran through the woods. Danny, go watch your Disney movies. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think we'd be remiss not to mention one more thing in this episode.
Yeah.
Matthew's shoulder.
Yeah.
Because I noticed he had the sling on when he was with Jamie at the well and they were finding the fake idol. And then he's in this challenge and he's climbing up on these cubes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, maybe Matthew's playing this up like at camp for like sympathy stuff. And then he screams, oh, guys, my shoulder. And I can't tell if he actually hurt his shoulder or not.
Yeah. I think he did. I think it probably – so he's getting where it's like popping out slightly. It's not going all the way out. Mm-hmm. It's just coming out a little bit and then it's going back in. But when that happens, you literally feel like you're getting an electric shock. It's like, boom. It's like that same reaction you have if you accidentally get shocked or if you stub your toe, whatever. It's a knee-jerk reaction. And it pops right back in because it's not totally dislocated. But when that happens, you want to punch the air in the face as hard as you can. And so, I think it's definitely sore and it's bothering him. And because he's not resting and doing everything properly. But, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there you go. David Crowder says it right there. I mean, I think it's still hurt. He's just got to be careful telling everybody how injured he is all the time. Because you're still in the pre-merge phase.
Yeah. It's still one of those things where it's like, if you're hurt, you're a liability. And especially like the way that tribe performed today in this challenge, like they're a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, they are. They are. All right. Well, real quick, I want to run through prop bets. So Danny had the episode title, which was Sneaky Little Snake. Matthew found a real hidden immunity idol. So that's the first real hidden immunity idol of the season because the cage idol was a separate thing. Claire killed it. For somebody who was in three damn episodes, she killed it if you had it for prop bet. Got five or less votes. Sat out three times. Didn't think I'd ever see that three times in three episodes. She had her mouth blurred. She had a confessional in every episode. She used her shot in the dark. So she had a lot. She did not cry. When Heidi says whatever to her, she like pokes herself in the eye, but there's no tears. There's no tears. She's getting a little sad, but there's no tears. Franny, however, did cry after the challenge. She went off and she cried, and so that counts. So that's what I have for all of those. Lauren also sat out. Heidi sat out. So they both get up to one, along with Matthew, who's at one. But Claire got three in three episodes, so good for her. Sad to see her go, but she's gone, and that's all there is to it. As I said, we don't know who we're actually going to have on either Sunday or Monday, mainly because I got to figure out if Miami's going to win their first game of March Madness. And if they are, I'm not podcasting on Sunday during their game. So we'd be doing it on Monday, which is making it hard for me to know when to reach out to people and ask when they can do. Blah, blah, blah. You guys don't care about that. Just keep an eye out for it. But tomorrow, John, you and McKenna are going to be doing a live episode on this channel. And then you're also going to be recording something for patrons, which are $10 and $20 patrons. Give another little quick hint in there and tell people why they become patrons for that.
I mean, tomorrow night, McKenna and I are going to be talking about this episode in historical context with things that reminds us of from previous episodes of Survivor. And you know what? There's a good chance that we're going to be talking about fake idols, which means there's a good chance the patron episode we talk about is one featuring a fake idol. And those are some of the best episodes from the past.
So, yeah, Survivor's patreon.com/survivorspecialists and $10 and $20 patrons get that. $20 patrons also have access to my after show, which I might record tonight. I might record tomorrow morning. I haven't decided yet. But I've been doing it generally the morning after so I can try to kind of collect my thoughts and not be so knee jerky. But we'll be doing that. Also, if you've been participating in the Power Rankings games, thanks. That's fun fantasy game. Sorry for those who had Claire. I think she was a pretty popular pick too. So that stinks for all of you. And if you're in the power rankings game, you're probably losing to me because I just had Claire at spot 13, and I'm feeling pretty damn smart after that. So tune in this weekend. Follow us on social media. Like this video and subscribe to the Survivor Specials. If you don't subscribe to us yet on YouTube and you listen to us all the time, subscribe to us. I don't know what you're doing. Please do that. Also, really random, and I haven't thought about this in years, but go leave an iTunes review if you really want to do that, because that actually can really help us. And we never ask for that because I honestly forget it's there. But my favorite one is that somebody says, "Beware these janky crooks." And I'm like, "Oh, thanks, man." Like, literally nothing else. And I can't delete that. I can't put in like a way to have that removed, even though clearly they've never listened to us, or they didn't like us. But do all that fun stuff and become patrons. It's a fun season. The Discord was alive with Corwin Green tonight. And I kind of feel bad that I don't have it going on my phone so that I can communicate as well, because Corwin was going off in the chat here. And yeah, so make sure you're in the Discord too. And if you're a $1 patron, yeah, you get access to the Discord. So that's fun as well. Anyway, that's it. John and I are about the podcast about Boogie Nights and The Road. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, tune in like 5 minutes. We're going to be doing that. John and I just can't get enough of talking to each other. So we're going to do that. And then I'm going to try to go to sleep for once. Bye, everybody. Corwin says he was so alone. I feel so bad. You were blowing it up tonight. I need more people to blow it up. Normally it's a pretty lively conversation, but tonight it was Corwin talking to Corwin, which I don't know. Definition of insanity was poor Corwin tonight. But anyway, that's it. It's because John was prepping for the podcast. He didn't have time to talk to him.